welcome to this week's edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast. It's been a while, but we're back. We're back because Peter Finnan has gone off gallivanting once again. So it's Ronan McNamara here with you, and I'm joined, as ever, by my partner in crime, Mark McGowan. How are you?
Well, Ronan, yeah, this week's edition might be a little bit of a stretch. This month's edition is maybe a little bit more accurate. But yeah, we're back as a two ball. We got rid of Finnan off to the States again, so you can expect better quality content out of myself and Ronan this week now than if we would have had if Pete was here.
Yeah, boss man's away, so the boys can come out and play. It is actually our first recording in literally a month. I was checking the Spotify there to see if we didn't catch up on, and our last podcast was the Ryder Cup recap on the 2nd of October. So this one's long overdue. There's been tumbleweed going through the Irish Golfer office for the last month, and people probably not wondering where we've gone to, but we're gonna come back.
Yeah, I was dropped for the Ryder Cup podcast because apparently my microphone sounded like it was recording with a toaster, as Pete said. So I took no offense at it, really. Just hope the two of you crashed and burned. But anyway, I'm back on, so all's forgiven.
You and your ham sandwich microphone. We're back this week, and as we seem to always do, Mark, we have a couple of Irish winners to talk about in the podcast this week. First off, Paul Conroy won for the second time at the Furman Intercollegiate in the States, and Sarah Byrne won before she went off to the World Amateur Team Championships, played the World Amateur Team Championships, flew back from Abu Dhabi to the Hurricane Invitation, which was Miami's own event. And she won that as well for back-to-back college wins in record-breaking fashion, broke the 54-hole scoring record with a 19-under total, including a second round of 63, which was an 18-hole scoring record for the program. Quite the win, considering she flew 16 hours from Abu Dhabi, had 3 hours sleep before playing the first 36 holes.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. Has anybody who stepped off an airplane and onto a golf course, or even if anybody who stepped out of a bar onto a golf course, you can often get off to a great start and think everything's going well, but like you'd often hit a wall around the 6 or 7 hole mark in, and what was coming easy is no longer coming easy. So for her to keep it up for all 18 holes and 54 holes of the competition in total, it's incredible. It's incredible shooting. And she's going through. She's having a hell of a year. As you mentioned, the win before the Abu Dhabi Team Championships. She's probably a little bit disappointed with how she went in the end up in the World Team Championships or World Amateur Team Championships after a good. I think she had a great opening round out there. But to come back and have a win in runaway fashion like that is incredible. And I mean, she's had a great year, finished as top leading amateur at the KPMG Women's Irish Open. She is a pro in waiting. You know, it's as soon as she graduates, I imagine she's going to easily transition into the pro ranks.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, we seem to have a good cohort of young female amateurs coming through, with Anya Dunnigan, Beth Coulter, Anna Foster to be added onto that. And of course, we've Lauren Walsh, recently turned pro and going well on the LET Access. So it does seem like behind Leona Maguire, Stephanie Meadow and Olivia Mahaffey, there's going to be a good crop of young pros coming through in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we could be the next South Korea.
Now we're the next Sweden. Next Sweden. Solheim Cup heroes all around.
Well, we take that.
But no, it's been some run for her as well. Like, she obviously tied for the lead after round one of the World Amateur Teams, finished 31st, as you said, which would have been a little bit disappointing. But like, she's won the Irish Close Championship already this year, and like, she's just gone from strength to strength, and she's carried it over into the fall season in the US. She won by 9 shots, actually, we forgot to mention there. And then Clandeboy freshman Rebecca Gardner is also playing for Miami. And she started well, actually, to her college career. She finished 8th as well. So all round, it was a good week for the Irish on the college scene. And yeah, it's great to have a couple of winners on the pod. Keep us talking for a few minutes anyway.
Yeah, I suppose if it's just me and you doing the pod every week, we'll the Irish golfers will be happy anyway. They know one of them's winning that week.
And hopefully we can have a couple of winners this week on the professional scene, with Conor Purcell heads to Mallorca this week at Club de Golf Al Canal for the Challenge Tour Grand Final. It's the climax of the race to Mallorca. He tees off in 36th position in the order of merit rankings, as it were, with the top 20 earning DP World Tour cards on Sunday. What are the chances?
What does he need to do? Is it realistically, does he need to win?
I don't actually know.
But a second or third place?
Everyone in the 45-man field has a chance of earning a card. So if the person ranked 45th wins, he'll get a card. So I don't think he needs a win per se, but certainly needs to be in the top 10, one would imagine.
Excellent. And you're packing your suitcase to head over there to cover it for the weekend?
I'm packing the suitcase. I'm down there to get the good news. And the sun.
That's it. Yeah, and well, I'm not that long returned from south of Spain myself, so it was pretty nice when I was down there. I got the good weather. There was a storm that absolutely fucking pissed with rain, but that came in the middle of the night, so it was all sun and smiles whenever we were in the golf course.
Very good. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Conor gets on, because the Challenge Tour in recent years has been quite kind to Irish players. Obviously, John Murphy went great guns on the Challenge Tour last year and got his card via DP World Tour Q School. And then Tom McKibben, obviously, is a Challenge Tour graduate, and he's won on the DP World Tour this year, one of four Challenge Tour graduates to actually strike gold in Europe's top tier. So it shows there, like, it's a tour that, you know, builds and, I suppose, replenishes tour players for the future. So, you know, if Conor can get his card this week, there's no reason why he can't make the next step up. And even if he doesn't, like, in hindsight and looking at things in retrospectively, like, it's his first year on the Challenge Tour full time, so to make the grand final in itself is a great year, having played on the Alps Tour in 2022 and then actually earned his full card just with his limited starts toward the end of the last Challenge Tour season. So, like, regardless of what happens, it has been another step in the right direction for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's had a very good year. He's quite often, I think, a lot of tournaments, maybe one bad round has kind of cost him a little bit, or he's often had great starts and maybe followed it up with a disappointing enough second round. So, I mean, the ability is quite clearly there. He's got on the Challenge Tour, you need to go out and. Most weeks on the Challenge Tour, at least, you need to go out and shoot low scores every day. The quality is that high, and quite often the golf courses are set up for, you know, for good score. And although they've had a couple of competitions this year where the weather conditions and everything made low scoring pretty much impossible, but Conor's had a great year. He played in the Irish Open and made the cut there. Just got himself a few nice quid for that. But there's no reason why he'll not be going there thinking there's any reason why he can't win or can't do enough to play his way into the top 20. It's a big ask, of course. I mean, there's a 45-man field, it's the top 45 players on the Challenge Tour, and every single one of them, you know, is capable of winning the event. So it's a big ask. But it's not one that's beyond him.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the sun shines there, because he loves the good weather. Obviously, had great weather for the Horizon Irish Open. But in Australia, he kicked off his year with his highest ever DP World Tour finish of 7th at the ISPS Handa Australian Open. Carried it on to the start of the Challenge Tour season with finishes of 7th and 6th in South Africa. And then he had to wait a while before coming 2nd in the Dormy Open. And since then, his form has been a little bit patchy. Since making the cut in the Horizon Irish Open, but he said himself to me earlier this year, he loves playing in the sun, loves the warm weather, so maybe the sun will shine on him. And it's pretty much an Irish version of the Spanish Inquisition this week, because we've 11 Irish all dotted around all corners of Spain this week for DP World Tour Q School. So it's going to be a busy week in Spain. Just is played across four golf courses, just to run through the names, a mixture of professionals and amateurs this week. It's Rory McGee, Rob Moran, who won the Irish Close, Mark Power, of course, who's recently turned professional and has impressed recently. Alex Maguire looking to cap off a great amateur year by winning his card. And John Murphy returns to the second stage of Q School. All those players are playing in Fontana's Golf Club in Girona. Meanwhile, Paul McBride, Niall Kearney and Obstor Order of Merit winner Ronan Mullarney are playing in Isla Canela Links, while Carton House amateur Mark Boucher is the only Irishman at Desert Springs Resort. At Golf La Pinala, Dermot McIlroy and Conor Roark are playing, as is Paul Dunne, who's making his grand return to competitive action. Hopefully, we'll be writing a few feel-good stories come Sunday evening, Monday morning, Mark.
Please God, I mean, you have to feel sorry, a little bit sorry for Mark Boucher. He's up there all on his own in Almeria, which is in kind of eastern Andalusia, I think. But at least he's on the southern part of Spain. The boys that are playing up in Girona, that's where we've got the most of them. As you said, the five lads: Mark Power, Rory McGee, John Murphy, Rob Moore, and Alex Maguire. They're all playing. It's quite northern Spain, so weather could be interesting to see what they get. But I mean, that's a very strong quintet that are playing there in Girona. You'd have to think, from those five, at least one or two are going to be very close. If not, you know, you could easily see all five of them placed near the in and around the cutoff mark. I'm not sure. Do you know how many qualify from each event?
In and around the top 25 in ties qualified to the final stage, depending on how many players are actually in the field once the week starts. But for the
I was talking to Ronan Mullarney a couple of weeks ago, just before the Alps Tour Grand Final. So he was planning on heading down to. So he's playing at Huelva, which is near the Portuguese border. So he was planning on heading down to Quinta del Lago for the week leading up to it to get some nice warm weather practice, and then it's a short enough hop across the border for him. So obviously he's had a great year on the Alps Tour. Has a challenge tour card guaranteed for next year. So in a way, he's kind of in bonus territory coming into Q School, a little bit like, you know, sort of, you know, a little bit like John Murphy was last year, where, for example, Murphy knew that he was guaranteed a challenge tour card and probably would get a couple of European Tour starts or DP World Tour starts, but then went to Q School and to use Pete's phrase, kicked on. got to skip the challenge tour altogether. Hopes are high. It's obviously going to be an extremely high standard as usual. You just look at some of the names that are there, and there was a lot of extremely talented Irish players that went out and fell at the first stage of Q School. So anybody that's playing second stage is a high quality player, and it's just going to be a case of turn up, play your best over the 4 days. If you play your best, you'll get through. You know, if you're a little bit off, chances are you're not.
Yeah, if you're a little bit off, see you later. And like, there's not much of a turnaround as well after the four rounds before they go and play the marathon 6 days at the final stage. But for the five guys up playing up in Fontana's in Girona, I know a few of them are big football fans, so maybe on the Saturday they'll take a trip out to see La Liga side Girona, who are joint top of Spanish's top tier with Real Madrid of all teams in just their fourth season in La Liga. So hopefully it's a good week for everyone over there.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say they'd go into Barcelona to see Barcelona play. It's a good spin down from Girona to Barcelona.
It's a good spin. Even though
Ryanair will tell you you're flying into Barcelona, but when you're actually flying into Girona, but that's that's classic Ryanair marketing there.
Classic Ryanair marketing. Their social media man has given up the ghost. He's resigned. So
Ryanair social media man has? That's a disappointment.
He put a big emotional tweet there this morning, Michael Corcoran, so God love him.
That's very disappointing. I'm sure they'll hire somebody else to fill his boots and come on and abuse passengers who don't read the small print when they're booking window seats and that kind of thing.
I'm flying out to Mallorca now on Friday with Lufthansa, so I'm hoping that there's no window seat shenanigans going on with the Germans. You know, they're bastions of efficiency and what have you.
Well, I'll not hear a bad word said about Ryanair. I love them. They're cheap. That's the primary thing I look for on an airline ticket.
What about your golf clubs?
Well, Ryanair haven't lost them yet. Swissair have, but Ryanair are batting 100% for me. So
Swissair,
and they haven't broken any yet. So maybe I'm one of the fortunate ones, but.
Maybe, yeah. Blame the Alps. Speaking of the Alps, obviously we haven't had a podcast in about a month, so people mightn't have heard this, but Ronan Mullarney, of course, won the Alps Tour Order of Merit. He was already guaranteed his challenger card ahead of the Grand Final, but recovered from a poor opening day to preserve his place at the top of the season-long rankings. And that's good. Like, his consistency was awarded two top 10s and a load of other... Oh, two wins, sorry, and a load of other top 10s and top 20s. So it's good to see him progressing, because as we talked to him a few weeks ago, it hasn't been easy for him falling off the Euro Pro Tour. He kind of had nowhere to turn really for a few weeks. So it's great to see him progressing. And going to Q School this week is almost a free hit for him, considering he has already won promotion to the Challenge Tour as well. So best of luck to him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had a hell of a year on the Alps Tour, as he was telling us when we were talking to him. He had just the one missed cut, a lot of top 10s. He was saying that quite often the formula, or maybe a better formula on those sort of like what he called the third tier tours, is, you know, to maybe have three or four wins and a ton of missed cuts. And that, you know, tends to work out maybe better in terms of order of merit ranking points. He only had the one missed cut, but had a couple of wins as well. So, I mean, he was a worthy winner of the Order of Merit, and it gives him a slightly better ranking going into the Challenge Tour should he not progress through Q School. All the Alps Tour graduates will be ranked within the same category, obviously, but if it's a case of the cutoff point comes halfway through that category, at least at the top of the list, he'll squeeze through. So. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting times for him. He's it'd be great to have another Irish man on the Challenge Tour, and hopefully another man on the DP World Tour.
Yeah, hopefully another couple, because we need them, because they're in short supply at the moment. Moving on, of course, we had our own Irish Golfer Magazine events grand final a couple of weeks ago in the K Club. Clandeboy star Lucy Morrison, just 14 years of age, became the first female winner of the Grand Final with a fantastic score of 45 points. Mark, have you ever had 45 points?
Believe it or not, I actually have.
I always knew you were a bandit.
I had 46 points playing off 15.
Ah, Jesus.
One summer I had... I was playing open competitions in Lucan, and I won two competitions out there. The first one I was playing off 18 and I had 46 points, and then later on that summer I had 46 points playing off 15. But I must have played maybe 20, 30 open competitions that year, and those are the only two that I even like came in the prizes. And so I can only imagine what they were saying about me out about Lucan, but I can assure you those were freak results. But I got slashed accordingly. I was playing by like off 10 or something like that by the end of the year. So,
and you've maintained but, yeah, that handicap ever since. American fairness, to you, you're not one of those.
I mean, well, no, I was down to 7 at one stage, but since I joined County Sligo, I'm. The slide continues. I can't seem to score above 31 or 32 points out here. So
the greenkeeper's revenge at the weekend done you out of it. I say, did it?
The greenkeeper's revenge. Well, they certainly got revenge on me.
Pins hanging off the front of greens into bunkers and all sorts going on down there just to get you.
It was a great day. I'd never played in one of those before. Really enjoyed it. apart from having to play off a chair on the first tee and having two swings and misses, but they were a very interesting tournament. I'll definitely make sure and put that one on the. I'll definitely play in that one next year again.
Yeah, and it was obviously a great time of year to have it along the bank holiday weekend. And as we all know, the weather hasn't been great and probably won't be great now until the spring, by all accounts. But those type of, I suppose, fun days, for want of a better word, are great to get people out, you know, in the winter and keep the eye in. And I suppose other golf clubs could follow suit in Ross's Point and, you know, put on a couple of, not to say gimmicky competitions, but something different, you know, something to bring people out, a bit of crack, whether you're playing good or bad.
Yeah, I saw somebody replied to, because I wrote a piece on it and had it up on the site, and somebody replied on Twitter, I think it was. I can't remember the club they were in now, so they'd have to forgive me, but they had a video of their own greenkeeper's revenge. Somebody, you had to play off a mattress on the first tee. So there was like a piece of artificial grass laid over the top of a mattress, and you had to play on that. So keeping stability through your swing there would obviously be extremely difficult. So there was a couple of videos of people sort of hacking their way off that. So they're obviously becoming much more popular around the country and everything, and great way to get people out for a bit of crack. And all the proceeds were going to the greenkeeper's Christmas party. So as I said, I hope they deserve I hope they enjoy the pints that we bought for them. So
in fairness, greenkeepers have put up with a lot this summer, especially with the rain. So every pint they get is well and truly earned. Moving on to a bit of Golf Ireland news. And last week, Golf Ireland and ISPS Hande announced a new partnership to grow participation in Ireland for golfers with a disability. This innovative new agreement will see ISPS Hande become the title sponsor of the ISPS Hande Irish Open for golfers with a disability, which, as we know, is played in Rogenstown. And we'll see golfers with a range of disabilities competing against players from Ireland and overseas. It's great to have, as we all know, ISPS Hande are a global brand. I think everyone who knows anything about golf knows who they are. So it's fantastic coup for Golf Ireland to get these fellas on board. And of course, my new best buddy, Dan Carter.
Indeed, yeah. Who'd have thought you'd become an egg chasing man?
I am. I'm a big rogue. I was gutted for my best pal Dan Carter on Saturday as the All Blacks were bested by the Springboks. Gutted for him.
Yeah, I'd say I would say he didn't need to slag you about the All Blacks beating Ireland anyway. You had no skin in that game at the start.
I'd have joined in the slagging, to be honest with you. I tell you what, rugby Twitter was unbearable at the weekend, saying, oh, sure, that basically South Africa winning means Ireland basically won the World Cup. So, you know, congratulations.
Yeah, well, look, after my golf with Brian O'Driscoll earlier on this year, I'm a fully converted rugby man as well. So packing in, swapping the O'Neill size 5 for a Gilbert.
What would your hero Michael Murphy say about that? For sure, of course, you could be a Connacht rugby man now. You'll be transferring from Ulster to Connacht rugby now that you're over there in Sligo.
It could be. In fact, maybe we'll start. Maybe I'll become mates with Bundy Aki.
Good, my life in golf piece. That could be.
And I'm gonna venture as far as to say Bundy Aki would be a rough man on a golf course.
He'd be powerful, like you. Not stylish, but powerful.
No. Yeah, very wayward.
Very wayward. Could he hit a 7-iron though, 197 yards on a simulator?
Well, very few of us can do that. Very few. Did you have a go at it?
I did. I got to 187.
For 187. For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about here, we got a simulator in the office. So I generally work from home, but I took a spin up to the office there last week, and sure, spent the first hour I was in there hitting balls against the screen, seeing what I could do. So 197 yards with a 7-iron. I was pretty happy with that. Now, that was one out of about 40 shots. I won't tell you what sort of numbers or what sort of trajectory the other balls had, but
it must have been a faulty golf ball. Speaking of like golf balls and golf balls,
it'll be like a classic social media golf influencer. You only put up the good shot.
Only put up the good shot is right. And speaking of losing golf shots left and right in the long grass, the Open Championship could be coming to Portmarnock potentially, and up in Dublin there. What do you make of that? That could be that would be really, really good off the back of having it in Portrush.
Ah, it'd be incredible. I mean, well, I think it was McIlroy first kind of mentioned it in the, you know, speaking of the Irish Open after, I think it was after his first round or maybe after his second round this year. So he obviously knew that discussions were going on in the background. But I mean, since then, we've had, so Portmarnock have come out and said that they were, that they'd been in discussions with the RNA and were seeking government funding for the infrastructural changes required. We had Catherine Martin coming out and saying that that the government were in favour of bringing this here for all the tourism and everything that it would generate. We had Paul McGinley, who tends to have the inside line on most of these things, saying that he sees it as very much a possibility. Didn't say, he said a 10-year time frame would be sort of what he would expect. And at the same time, we had Martin Slumbers, the CEO of the RNA, saying that he was very much open to the possibility, obviously with certain hurdles that need to be cleared first, but should those hurdles be clearable, then he was in favour of it. So I would say it looks extremely likely. I think we're going to have an Open Championship in this country probably within the next 10 years. And it's just going to be incredible. It's going to be outrageous.
Yeah, it should be absolutely fantastic. And of course, they're hosting the Women's Amateur Championship next year. And then you would imagine they will get the Women's Open Championship at some stage as well, as sort of a precursor for hosting the Open Championship in a few years' time. So you'd imagine there's a few joining of the dots that needs to be done before the Claret Jug can touch down in Portmarnock.
Yeah, I would say the women's Open will come first, and that will look. We all love the Women's Open. We give it incredible coverage, and we'll be delighted and won't be able to wait to attend that. But in the grand scale of things, it is a smaller, obviously a much smaller event in terms of the crowds, and the infrastructure, the hospitality, everything that's required for an Open Championship. The Women's Open Championship is that on a smaller scale. So yeah, it will probably be a little bit of a trial run. But I mean, in recent years, the Open Championship hasn't been at Muirfield since 2013. Muirfield is one of the, I mean, if you talk to any of the pros, the top pros, they'd all tell you that Muirfield is possibly one of the best, maybe the best golf course on the open rota. Although Portrush, a lot of people were saying that about Portrush after 2019, but Muirfield just didn't get the crowds that a Portrush got, or that St Andrews gets, or sort of any of the other open venues, really. And I mean, that's obviously a massively important thing for the RNA. The revenue generated, you know, funds so much of their annual, you know, expenditure on golf, and which, I mean, obviously is from grassroots right the way up. But I think they're looking at Portmarnock, saying that this could be a potential huge money spinner, because it's in, for starters, we all know the Irish people will attend absolutely anything going. We saw the huge crowds we had at the K Club this year for the Horizon Irish Open. Portmarnock, obviously just north of Dublin City, close to Dublin Airport. If they can work out those infrastructural issues, And I've no doubt they will be able to. Where there's a will, there's a way. I think we're gonna have an absolutely massive Open Championship.
Yeah, record crowds and, you know, big crowds are obviously where the RNA seem to be going. And obviously we've hit the Open coming to Royal Portrush in 2025, and in 2019 they had a record breaking crowd of 237,750 fans, which was a record for a championship stage outside of St Andrews. And of course they're looking to better that and try to get around 280,000, which would just be outrageous. But as you said, like, great golf courses like Muirfield, and I'm sure a couple of others might feel, you know, maybe they're being left by the wayside because they just won't be able to compete with these numbers. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Open Championship rota actually looks over the next, say, 10, 15 years. Will really traditional golf courses be kind of ousted for the sake of space, really, I suppose?
I mean, yeah, to a certain extent. But I think I don't think the crowds issue was because Muirfield doesn't have the space. Now, personally, I've never been there. I'm not sure if you have.
I was there. It's difficult to get to. Like, it's difficult to get any accommodation nearby. Like, just reading up on it there, like, the organizers in 2013 blamed the, I think they blamed the hot weather rather than, like, the high ticket prices, because there was a drop of 20,000 spectators in 2013 from the last time the event was staged in Muirfield, which I think was 2002. So, you know, they've had a crowd drop before. Are they going to risk another one, I suppose, by returning there is the question.
Yeah. But does the course and the area, like, have the capability to host bigger numbers? It's just the town and the, maybe it's a little bit awkward to access, but theoretically, if 200,000 people or 250,000 people turned up for the week, could the course and everything cater for them?
I don't know. I was only a child, Mark, when I was there. Would you relax?
You're not planning for your future career in journalism when you would be asked this question on a podcast?
I didn't think you'd ask me that back, though. I'm just saying, like, we stayed in Falkirk, which is up in Scotland, obviously, and just googling it here in the Google Maps, I think it was a good hour away. Like, so that's what you're talking about, and we would have booked it quite early at the time as well. It's just hard to get to. Then we obviously had to park in various park and rides, which is obviously no picnic. Just googling, yeah, it was almost a two hour train journey and an hour drive. Like, it's a difficult place to get to.
So you were there for the Open Championship.
Yeah.
In which, what, 2013 was it?
2013, yeah. And like, I just remember, like, there'd be no real sort of scurry or frenzy.
That's only 10 years ago. You were 15 or 16 or something like that, weren't you?
Very immature for my age. But even then, like,
I remember, don't be. I thought you were going to try to tell me you're like one of those little toddlers, you know, that the cameras pan to with a plastic golf club swinging away.
I might as well have been, given the size.
Sure, you were practically old. You probably could have managed to get served in the bar there. No.
No comments. But just going back to the Open Championship potentially coming to Port Marnock. Obviously, the British Open tag has been taken away from it. Well, the RNA have tried to get it away. There's obviously some traditionalists will still call it the British Open. Does the Open potentially come to Port Marnock open a can of worms with respect to why can't France or Spain or Portugal host the Open Championship if they're going to move it outside of the UK?
Well, I would say the ethos of the Open Championship, regardless of what name it's called, the ethos is going to be played. It has to be played on a links course. Well, at least the proper Open Championship. I know the Senior Open and the Women's Open have gone to non-links courses before, but I think the Open Championship will always be played on a pure links course. So I think that's gonna rule out most of Europe. And might be a couple of courses in Holland which maybe have gonna throw their hat into the ring.
Is Amsterdam near links?
What's that?
Is Amsterdam near links?
It's not that far away, you know. Not that far away. But I think what'll be more interesting is I'm looking forward to the. I mean, we all know the Americans purely refuse to use the Open Championship tagline. It's always the British Open. I mean, in fairness, 90% of the time I'm referring to it as well. I call it the British Open until I'm actually writing something official and you have to give myself a slap in the wrist and say it's the Open Championship. But when Ireland are hosting if Ireland do host an Open Championship and everybody's calling it the British Open, there'll be a lot of people on social media complaining it's not Britain. Britain is it's in the Republic of Ireland. It's, you know, it'll be a fun one. It'll be like the Brits are at it again. They're trying to claim Dublin's Britain now.
Trying to claim all our Irish players, as you see on Sky Sports nearly every other week. And moving on to some other news, Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods have revealed the details for their new high-tech indoor golf league. I think it's the TGL that it's called. It's going to start on the 9th of January of next year with 15 of the world's top 20 already signed up. It's a kind of a virtual golf league played on a simulator in a kind of a dome setting with loads of fans, and it'll have its own short game area as well for when they're around the greens and on the greens. They'll use real grass as well, which is quite interesting. Will you be watching?
I mean, I probably will. Yeah, it's gonna be they're gonna be on like, what is it, Monday evening, or I think it's Monday evening or Tuesday evening. Starting in the middle of winter, isn't it? So
starting second week of January on ESPN. So for those who still haven't been arrested for having the old dodgy box, I'm sure you'll be able to find it somewhere.
Well, that's if any 5-0 are listening, I don't have a dodgy box. I'm all legal. But if it's going to be on in the evening time in the States, it's all in Florida, isn't it?
It's in Palm Beach State College, which I presume is in Florida.
Yeah, so if it's going to be on the evening time there, which means you add five hours on for us, so it's likely it could be like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning that it's going to be broadcast live here. So I don't know, we might have to get paid overtime to sit up and cover that one.
Yeah, we can all get Tuesdays off after staying up to watch the TGL.
Yeah, also there's been no change from your current life then. Your Tuesdays off.
None at all. I still play my golf on the Tuesday. Moving on then, your buddy from, I have to be careful now what I say here, but from Ballybuffet and Stranorla, but who also plays his golf out of Rosapenna, Ryan Griffin of Maynooth University, is heading over to Dubai next month for the Live Promotions event, which is essentially the European Tour Q School equivalent for Live, obviously. It's a $25 entry fee, and it's a $1,500 prize purse with a potential 200 grand payout for the winner. And he qualifies because he was a member of the International Palmer Cup side earlier this year, and he actually impressed that week as well. So for $25 compared to around the 3,000 euro mark to enter Q School for the DP World Tour, I suppose if you put your human rights morals aside, like, and you're a young amateur looking to, you know, get into the pro game and kickstart your career, why wouldn't you?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, if you all you need to do is go over there and play four good rounds. I mean, obviously it's a, you know, make it sound a lot easier than it is, but if you go over there and you play four extremely good rounds and manage to get yourself into, there's only three cards on offer, so it's a huge ask. First of all, you'd have to play a one round to qualify from stage one, and then there's a reset with the additional players, so there'll be like the likes of the players dropping off Live, players who've performed really well in the amateur championships, players who've performing well on the on the other professional tours will all come in at the second stage and scores reset, and then you've got a, this is like a 54 hole qualifier from them effectively. But I mean, you can, if you can go out there and put four really good rounds together, get yourself one of those tour cards. If you play a full season on LIV next year, you are guaranteed to win over $1.5 million. That's guaranteed. You, if you finish last in every single event, $1.5 million. Not to mention, I mean, Siwon Kim this year pretty much did finish last in nearly every event. Not far off it. But with team bonus money and everything, he earned like over $1.75 million.
Not bad.
I mean, for students or for people coming out of college and everything, it's like you couldn't hold it against somebody going over there. If you want to hold it against the likes of the top players who are already multi millionaires, that's a different thing. Holding anything against like a young person who doesn't have two pennies to rub together, really. That's, you know, they'd be crazy not to go, I think.
Yeah, I think when you look at the, I suppose, the more established professionals going over to live, and then of course some of the footballers going to the Saudi League, like it won't change your life, but it'll change your legacy. Whereas the case of Ryan, it'll definitely change his life if he can be even mildly successful and he gets to where he wants to go. There was obviously four places available for Ireland's four Walker Cup players, Liam Nolan, Alex Maguire, Matt McLean and Mark Power, but they all have other priorities. Liam has exams in NUIG while Matt McLean is going back to the day job as an optometrist up in Belfast, while obviously Alex and Mark have DP World Tour Q School. So they obviously have $3,000, those two fellas. But it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and especially into the future as well, because obviously Lahinch is going to host the Palmer Cup next year. Hopefully we'll have a couple of Irish players playing that as well. So, and if the LIV Q School continues to be a thing, you know, why wouldn't you go as well? And that's just the way it is. Speaking of why wouldn't you go, why wouldn't you buy, or why would you buy, as far as Rory McIlroy is concerned, just a little story to add in, that he wants to invest in a wee little stake in Manchester United Football Club. He wants to get into bed with the Glazers and be the brunt of the fans' blame, even though it's completely the player's fault and the manager's fault for when things go wrong. McIlroy might fix the roof, but he won't fix the Man United team. So would you ever invest in a football club, Mark, if you had the chance?
If I had McIlroy's money, I might. I think there's no danger of me investing in a football club in the on the AGM salary. That's for sure. I think even Finn Harps would probably turn away my money. I don't look, McIlroy's obviously he's a well publicized big Manchester United fan. I would suggest he's also getting involved in Formula One and everything. And I'd imagine a lot of those things are for, you know, to turn a profit out of. I don't know if he'd be throwing money into Man United with the idea of getting a profit out of it. I'd say that might be just like a labor of love, maybe.
I think he should fleece them for every penny they have. But this is.
But I'm looking forward. I'm looking forward. I mean, but if he does throw his hat in Man United, I'm looking forward to, you know, the Rory McIlroy, you're a wanker chance of, you know, when he turns up at the Open Championship next year, and there's a ton of Liverpool fans there at the first tee.
I tell you what, Man United fans be going to the Norwich City Club shop and absolutely rinsing the place out of for those green and yellow scarves. But on a more serious note, like, we're looking at what McIlroy is trying to do and what he has done with the Alpine team with the investment there. Like, this is kind of becoming the done thing in sport, like, because we Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, they're part of the 49ers group who invest in Leeds United over the summer, and they actually approached McIlroy to join them. But being such a staunch Man United fan, he couldn't go. But we've obviously seen Tom Brady at Birmingham City and how he's now cocked that up with the appointment of Wayne Rooney. Like, can you see other golfers getting involved in owning major sports teams or sports franchises, as some of them are becoming?
I mean, well, certainly. I mean, these guys obviously have got, like, obscene wealth, and they've all got like financial managers or teams in place to manage those finances. And I mean, the only reason any of them are getting involved in these teams or these sort of ventures is that they think that there's a profit to be made there. No, they may be given like a list of options. You can invest in this software company, or you can invest in this sports team, and then people are like, ah, actually, no, like the sports team. I'd rather be associated with a sports team, or rather kind of like get to follow something than just sort of looking at like how the IBM stock is faring or something like that. But yeah, I mean, they're all doing it for financial return. Unless, like I said, unless they're like staunch supporters of that team or something like that, and they're like, well, I'd like to help here. But I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe McElroy's is eyeing a profit with Man United, but you never know. In which case, he'll be as bad as the Glazers.
Oh, good. I rubbed my hands together on that one. But you could do a Shane Lowry. You could do a Shane Lowry and maybe invest in down GAA. Obviously, we know what Lowry's done for Offaly so far, and it's been brilliant. Well, you want to keep the fans on a leash down there in Offaly now, considering what the Tullamore boys were at to that referee a couple of weeks ago.
You'd expect nothing else. I mean, they were screwed out of it. Summerhill, your Summerhill boys from Meath obviously paid off the ref.
That's nonsense. The referee got that call spot on, and he should be applauded for changing his mind under the most fierce pressure and sticking to his guns.
Like. Didn't he change his mind twice?
I don't know, but either way, he got to the right decision, and Summerhill march on.
I didn't actually see it. I only saw the video of him going down. Now, I have to say, I'm not on here defending people who abuse referees or put their hands on referees or anything. But he did go down a little bit easy.
I would just stop.
He did. He took a little bit of a dive.
So you're pro-violence. That's what you're saying. Let the fans on. Let them stream. Let's all go loud.
What
2010.
What part of I'm not defending people who put their hands on referees says I'm pro-violence. But anyway. moving swiftly on.
Speaking of fellas who are going down, where does Graham McDowell go next? Obviously, his live contract expired upon the conclusion of their second season, which was a couple of weeks ago, the team championship in Miami. Or was it in Jeddah? I don't even know. That's how much attention I pay to it. But he earned over $5 million across his 2 years, despite having only one top 10 in 2 years, earning over $5 million. Where does he go from here?
Yeah, because I mean, look,
is he going to get a new deal? Is like he was a stopgap player when he signed the deal 2 years ago in the first place. And obviously he seems to think that he was such a great spokesperson for the tour that might earn him a few Browning points with the Newcastle boys. But it's interesting to see what happens now, because it seems after having such a poor period after COVID on the DP World Tour and PGA Tour, Liv kind of gave him a lifeline and saved him from limbo. But now it feels like he's obviously going to be back into limbo.
Yeah, look, he obviously hasn't performed particularly well since going to Liv. I was reading, Graham's playing over in the International Series, the Asian Tours International Series event this week, which is like the Volvo China Open, so it's a former European Tour event, but it's now under the Asian Tour ring. But he was actually asked about that event, you know, the promotion event, like the Open qualifier they were talking, Ryan Griffin's going to and all. So obviously, you'd imagine every Liv player who doesn't get themselves a contract for next year. So if just in case people aren't aware, the top 24 players in the Liv rankings were guaranteed their status for next year, as were all team captains who are outside of the top 24. Then there's kind of like a period, or there was like, was it four or five players who were definitely relegated? Definitely relegated, although they will have an opportunity to enter that open qualifier and you know, play their way back in. So Graham wasn't one of those guys. He's sort of like finished in what's kind of like the limbo positions.
He was 42nd out of the 48, and only the top 24 and team captains are guaranteed a contract for 2024.
Yeah, so he's not guaranteed a contract, but between now and the season starting next year, you expect there'll be Liv will be trying to approach and bring in new players, you'd imagine, from the DP World Tour, the PGA Tour. I mean, last year they got, you know, Thomas Peters amongst others. Thomas Peters is probably the headline name that they got in the sort of off season last year. So you have to figure, it looks like there's going to be no framework agreement signed between the PIF and the PGA Tour, so it should still be open season for them. We could see the likes of a Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, maybe possibly jumping ship, saying this is their last chance to get a big signing bonus to go in case there is an agreement reached and things come back together again or whatever. But after these players are brought in, whoever and players will be brought in, team captains can then assemble their teams however they wish. And you'd have to think, okay, he may not have been fantastic, but I still think Graham will be given a spot by one of the team captains, because I mean, going down the sort of the Asian Tour rankings outside of McDowell, I'm not sure there's any players there that you would definitely think are gonna perform better than him. So I would say you may go with the sort of the tried and tested. That being said, if he doesn't get a pick from a team captain, then it will be to the open qualifier with him and try and get one of those three cards. But I would just reading between the lines in his quotes, unless he was saying it'll be very curious to see who's in the field in this open qualifier. Saying obviously no Liv players don't want to be there, because that means you're in the relegation zone or you haven't secured your job for next year. But he was just saying it'll be very curious to see who'll be there. The fact that he wasn't saying I'll be there, I'm guessing that he's going to get a nod.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens as well with the DP World Tour supposedly giving away their best to the PGA Tour and then going and getting the PGA Tour's reject. So it could be a load of, I don't know, Tom Hoagies and Michael Kims coming over to the PGA Tour. And what's his name? Grayson Murray coming over as well. So it's an interesting
horizon. Tom Hoagie would be a big coup actually for the... Unfortunately, it's going to be your Austin Smothermans and your...
Tom
Hoagie, the 126 to 200.
Tom Hoagie couldn't hack it at the K Club, would you go away?
But Tom Hoagie's in the top 125, so he's not gonna count for that.
We're getting Jimmy Walker. That's who we're getting.
Jimmy, yes, good man. Number 126.
Number 126. The golden slot in the world of golf.
Right, what's next on our list to talk about this week?
Why Peter is such a beep. No, but I think we should move on to heroes and villains, Mark, because I've got quite an interesting hero. Well, it could be a villain depending on where you look at it, or just an all-round clown. But Australian all-round cricketer Glenn Maxwell has been ruled out of his size World Cup match against England after falling off a golf cart and sustaining a concussion.
I didn't hear about this. Excellent. So he's where was he playing? Was he in?
Maxwell finished.
Well,
I say
actually, yeah. If they're supposed to be playing England, they're not going to be playing in. Oh, it's the Cricket World Cup's on at the moment.
Cricket World Cup,
India, isn't it?
Yeah, he was playing around golf at Gujarat's Kalar Blues and Greens Club on Monday evening, and he was riding on the back of a golf cart with his teammates when he lost his grip, fell, and hit his head. So that's good. I'm sure that wasn't premeditated anyway to get him dropped and someone else can take his place.
It's fantastic. So he's your hero.
He is my hero.
Excellent. Well, I was going a little bit more serious. I was going to go with Sarah Byrne as my hero.
But having winners as your heroes is just too mainstream. That's a real thing.
I was actually struggling for this week, the heroes and villains. The villain's very easy. The villain's always very easy for me. But there's not been that much happening, and it's been a quiet time in golf, so heroes were a little bit harder to dig up. But the villain this week, almost like the weekly villain for me, is of course the PGA Tour, as always. This week, the reason of the villain this week is because they suspended two players for betting on golf. Now, it's okay. It's a little bit of a murky world there. You know, professional athletes betting on the sports that they're playing in, whatever. But this wasn't quite backing yourself to lose, or yourself to get booked, or yourself to give away a penalty, or anything like that.
It wasn't quite Sandro Tonali.
Snooker players backing. Snooker players backing. I'm going to lose the first frame and I'm going to win the second frame, and you know, So the two guys, it's the PGA Tour suspending them, but they're Korn Ferry Tour players. So Jake Stiano and Vince India, they're called. So Stiano was suspended for 3 months, and India was suspended for 6 months. The suspensions start now, which means that they can't take part in deep on the Q School, and so they've no opportunity to, you know, to advance or to play their way onto the PGA Tour for next year. But the reason that they were suspended, obviously betting, but Stiano admitted that his bets, which was $115 in total, I think it was. So he put $25 on Bryson DeChambeau to birdie a par 5 during a PGA Tour tournament that Stiano wasn't playing and had no involvement in. This was obviously prior to Bryson going to live. And then he had three other bets, all during the DeChambeau Brooks Koepka made for TV, the match, the 12-hole match they played last year. So there's four bets, totaling $116, were all, he must be a Bryson fan, by the way, I'm assuming. but he got a 3 month suspension for that. That is extremely harsh. There's no reason. There's no reason why they couldn't have gone to him and just gave him a little slap in the wrist and say, "Here, we know what it's come to our attention that you've been gambling on this. Cut that out. This is a warning. Don't fuck around." To suspend them for 3 months and 6 months, respectively, is extremely harsh. So
it is
villain of the week for sure.
It is, but like I suppose you can argue like. Korn Ferry, PGA Tour, they're all the one. And if you're betting on Bryson in a PGA Tour event and Bryson in the match when he was a PGA Tour player, like I suppose they can argue that it's all intertwined into the one and you're representing the company or the brand or what have you. But I do agree with you. It's very harsh. And
yeah, not
the events he's missing as well. Like that's going to be the difference on whether you make it or not as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying just look the other way altogether. I'm saying definitely pull him into a room and set him down and read the riot act.
I wonder, did he win those bets? That's what I want to know.
It's like Bryson lost that. Assuming, going on the logic that he backed Bryson to birdie a par 5 and then had three more, his other bets were all on Bryson match. I'm figuring he's a Bryson fan. And Koepka spanked him in that match. I know, because I had Koepka backed in it. It's like the one thing for sure is that Koepka is going to treat this like a major. He's not going to want to lose to Bryson. So I'm going to assume that he lost those bets. He might have won the birdie of the par 5 bet, but
he might have. We here at Irish Golfer don't condone bad gambling, but if you do like fancy a footer, please gamble responsibly. Had to get that in before the lawyers come in. You don't want to be getting suspended now, Mark. It's just me on the podcast then.
Well, I gamble and I do not gamble responsibly.
Oh, we know. And on that note, everyone, I think it's time to say goodbye. Mark, we've had another great run. And like any great team, we'd be aiming to go back to back next week.
Yeah, amen. You can trust us. We'll not miss a podcast between now and the end of the year.
Oh, that's a stretch.
This promise is delivered to you by Peter Finnan.
Oh, then it's definitely not happening. Not happening at all. Anyway, as always, thanks to everyone for tuning in, and hopefully we didn't bore you to death and you stuck around. For those who did, please check out the website for reports on the Challenge Tour Grand Final. Some live videos as well will be coming from there on the social media channels. We follow Connor Purcell in his quest to make it to the DP World Tour. Of course, we'll also have updates from the 4 Q School venues this week as well. Stephanie Meadows in LPGA Tour action as she looks to close in on the race, the CME Globe Tour Championship in a couple of weeks. Just 2 regular events remaining before that. I think she's 65th in the rankings with 60 players making it through at the end of the year. And of course, there'll be other Golf Ireland stuff across the week. And of course, the Asian Tours, GMAC looks to earn some much needed cash now that his contract to live is due to expire. Mark, thanks very much for joining me this week.
Pleasure as always, Ronan.